Good afternoon and welcome, Brinhan Dalpal. I'm Auriel Miller. I'm Director of the IWA. For those of you who are just joining us for the first time, welcome to IWA Towers. It's great to be in the office again briefly. We are Wales's leading independent think tank. We've got a long track record of shaping debates and influencing change in Wales through our policy research and advocacy, our online and print publications, which provide platforms for robust comment and debate, and our agenda setting events. We're a membership organisation with members right across the country and much further afield. We're funded by our members, the events that we run ourselves, and independent trusts and foundations. We're really delighted that so many of you, almost half of today's attendees, in fact, are our members. For those of you who aren't yet members of the IWA, do please consider joining us, because you too can help us make our project happen, help us continue to deliver events such as this one, and play your own part in making Wales better. A little bit of housekeeping before we get stuck in. It's a webinar on Zoom, so you're muted, I'm afraid, by the host, and we're going to use the Q&A section for questions. If you'd like to direct your question to a particular panelist, please do state their name. If you can ensure your questions are in the chat by 2:30, that will help us make sure they're all answered before the end of the event. We're trying this for the first time because I know it's frustrating getting to the end of the event and there's still some questions that we haven't managed to get to. We also encourage you to put your camera on speaker view in the top right corner of your Zoom screen rather than gallery, because then you see just the person who's talking. Do please and chat in the chat, obviously engage with each other in the chat. Sorry about the noises off, there's drilling next door in the building site. Note that all chat and questions are recorded. And the hashtag for today's event, we've got two. We've got Understanding Welsh Places and we've got Welsh Places Charter. So the Welsh Places Charter has been created by the Welsh Places Influencing Group, which is convened by the IWA. We're a coalition of organisations, practitioners and academics passionate about creating a Wales in which people's social, economic, environmental and cultural well-being is at the centre of our communities. The COVID-19 pandemic has exposed and accelerated problems that have long been embedded in our communities. Our places are struggling in the wake of declining retail sales and lockdown restrictions, and this has had a knock-on effect on the environmental, economic, social and cultural well-being of Wales. It's clear that the way in which we live and work won't be the same as we move towards recovery. And some really big questions need to be asked about what we need to do to ensure our places can not only recover, but they are thriving and resilient too. We at the IWA and our partners believe that the answers to these questions lie within our communities. And throughout this charter, we set out a vision for a Wales where more economic power is returned to local citizens. And it is the norm for people to have a greater say in how they shape their communities. In order for Wales's places to build back better from the effects of the pandemic and economic shutdown, we need to see power redistributed back to our communities. We think all communities should have the tools to better understand their area, the voice to represent their needs to decision makers, and the means to make a change in the places where they live and work. The pandemic recovery presents an opportunity for us to design communities that work for people and foster health and well-being. All Welsh places should be co-designed with and for all people living and working there. They should be well connected and promote opportunities for social interaction. They should aim to become living wage places and support the creation and retention of good quality jobs. They should provide high performing and responsive services and facilities for people, and they should celebrate their culture and identity. We believe that this can create a lasting impact by improving the physical environment and creating sustainable and vibrant places that are focused on supporting people's well-being. Our charter has set out recommendations to the new Welsh Government and local authorities in Wales as to how we can make this vision a reality. In today's discussion, we're going to reflect on what the post-election context means for our priorities and where the key risks and opportunities are over the next 5 years. But first, I'd like to introduce our panel. We're delighted to welcome back Ellen Jones. Ellen is a recent IWA alumna and has moved on to a new role at the Consumer Council for Water, who are very lucky indeed to have her. At the IWA, she was our Understanding Welsh Places project lead, raising awareness of the innovative online data tools which we and our partners built together. UWP as we affectionately call it, helps non-data geeks to engage with the publicly available data, which in turn helps them understand their place and help shape its future. Ellen also led the Welsh Places Influencing Group, bringing together a myriad of perspectives and creative ideas into the succinct and readable document we're launching today. It felt only right to invite her back to share what she's learned about Welsh Places during her time with us. Welcome, Ellen. We're also pleased to have three other members of the Welsh Places Influencing Group with us too. Roisin Wilmot is Director of the Royal Town Planning Institute Cymru, the RTPI. Roisin's been a chartered town planner since 1994 and was elected as Fellow of the RTPI in 2016. She's the Director of RTPI Cymru and Northern Ireland, responsible for ensuring there are services in place for planners based in Wales and Northern Ireland, and for leading on RTPI work regarding planning policy in both jurisdictions. Welcome, Roisin. Chris Jones has joined us. Thank you so much, Chris, stepping in because Clear Up Gareth, unfortunately, was ill today, and we send our best wishes to him for his recovery. Chris has been a stalwart member of the UWP group since the beginning and is director of Chris Jones Studio. With over 30 years' experience as a place practitioner, he's worked on placemaking, town centre development, and strategic rural development programmes with a focus on sustainable regeneration. He's led a number of placemaking projects, including Caldecott's Cross Destination Space, Durham's Heart of the City Public Realm Scheme, Blaenau Ffestiniog's Regeneration Scheme, and Chepstow High Street Regeneration. It's quite a mouthful to say that quickly. Finally, we welcome John Henahan. John's an Associate Director at CLES, the Centre for Local Economic Strategies, the organisation that helped illustrate the interrelationships between places in Wales and the sister tool in Scotland, which is, funnily enough, Understanding Scottish Places. John has significant experience working in political and social policy environments, and prior to joining CLES, John's work spans policy and politics and civic society with extensive local government experience, where he championed innovation and radical change towards solutions which are value-led, empathic and responsive to people's real lived experience. So welcome, John. So in the run-up to the election, just to take you back a little bit, the IWA asked the various political parties how they would respond to the key issues facing Welsh places post-COVID. And we're going to put a link in the chat now, which shares what the five major parties came back to us with, just in case you haven't seen that. We do want to keep, like I said, lots of time for questions to our panel from everybody here. So please get thinking and submit your questions through the Q&A function at the bottom of your screen via the chat box, where our moderator Andy will pick them up. So try and get your questions in the next 20 minutes or so. So let's go straight to our panel then. Ellen, I'm going to come to you first because, you know, this charter came out of the collaborative project Understanding Welsh Places that we worked on, that is funded by both the Carnegie UK Trust and the website itself funded by Welsh Government. Can you tell us a little bit about the genesis of the charter, please?
Yeah, so I was working for the Institute of Welsh Affairs when the pandemic broke out. A lot of my work was talking to communities across Wales about how they could use Understanding Welsh Places to find opportunities within their communities. And I was hearing some fantastic stories across Wales about some really innovative stuff that people were doing. But we were also hearing things about the fact that not always the infrastructure is there for these things to take place. And people were kind of doing them off their own back. And there was also some senses of frustration about having a say over what people's communities look like and how they worked for them. And we also, hand in hand with that, we had the consortium who helped design the website and bring all of the stuff on there together. And we saw the opportunity ahead of the Senate elections to use all of that wonderful experience and all of the share all the innovative things that are happening in Wales to create what we think are the top recommendations for the Welsh Government to ensure that people have thriving communities as we come out of the pandemic, and that people are able to shape what that looks like so it can work for them.
So let's just pick up on this, and I can just see the typical, isn't it, the drilling starts at 5 to 2. Never mind. So one of the things that you flagged there is around the issue of local democracy and how we've, you know, endorsed through the charter a number of new tools and enhanced support for participation in local decision making. can, you know, we're a couple of weeks after the election, 3 weeks, isn't it, this week. What kind of things do you anticipate coming out of the Senate over the next 5 years? And can you give us a couple of examples of that, of, you know, that innovative practice that you talked about having seen over your time at the IWA?
Yeah, as you spoke about a little bit in the opening, the COVID-19 pandemic has it's accelerated and also exposed a lot of issues that our communities have been facing for a very long time. But it's also shown us that crisis response is often really well handled at a local level. And we need to take all of that experience from the local people in order to create thriving communities. And Welsh Labour over the last Senedd actually have put a lot of things in place, especially around placemaking, making sure that the policy is embedded in Planning Policy Wales and in the National Development Framework, and also making sure that vibrant communities are really embedded in not just planning policy, but all the decisions that Welsh Government make going forward. So I think a lot of at the very high level, are going in the right direction in regards to placemaking, communities and local democracy. But we need to see, as we build back better from the pandemic, and I think they called in their manifesto for to build back fairer as well, that all of those voices are going to be heard. And a lot of the things that we call for example, encouraging people to have a better say in all forms of democracy in their local areas through things like citizens' assemblies, and as well as giving people the support so that they're able to create projects that work for them in their local community. And it isn't just other people coming in to help them with that, they actually have the time to be able to work on that and create what would work for them as well.
Thanks. We're going to pick up on some of those resourcing issues, I think, a bit later on today. But Roisin, I'm going to come to you because from a planning perspective, obviously our charter calls for a number of things to improve participation in the planning process. Could you talk us through some good examples you've seen in recent years and what kind of thing we might need to see becoming really just standard good practice in terms of becoming the norm in Wales?
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. What's really important in all of this is the early engagement. So it's not when the planning application is submitted and the responsibility then of the local authority to consult with communities. It's much, much well before then. It's when it's designing plans, designing proposals. So it's that really early engagement and trying to reach everyone as well. And some good examples that we've seen recently through our award scheme, actually, which is a good way of showing this good practice, is Grange Pavilion in Cardiff, for example, which was by Benham Architects and IBI Group. They spent years actually trying to come up with local residents about what could go into this building and how could they change this building. So that was a really good example. Another one was in Pontypridd with Rhondda Cynon Taf Council. They were looking at new town centre regeneration, and Clys Cadwen was the final proposal that's been put forward there. But they really needed community buy-in there. So they did lots of engagement exercises, trying to reach different parts of the community. So not just one consultation event in one venue. It's looking at different times, different methods, different venues, trying to appeal to different parts of communities. And also, of course, digital, which is really important now, but not relying on any individual one of those. And there are examples throughout Wales of good early engagement and using different methods to get to different parts of the community, if you like.
Thanks, Roisin. And I'm going to ask people in the audience today, please, to share any of those examples in the chat. So it's a good opportunity to say, do you know about XYZ going on around the place as well, just so that we can all learn. John, obviously, big area of interest for you and Claes. What can you talk us through the kinds of barriers, the other barriers that people have in terms of being more involved in decision making in their area, and what you suggest in terms of how we might overcome those?
Yeah, sure. Good afternoon, everyone. I think for me, one of the key barriers actually is perhaps being too limited in our scope of what we mean by democratic participation. And people should be empowered to play an active role in shaping all aspects which impact on where they live and where they work. So for me, that's not just about influencing decisions, whether that be about development plans or proposals, but also more fundamentally about who owns our economies, where does the investment go, who benefits from that investment. And I think that means putting land and property back into the hands of residents through more inclusive ownership and stewardship models. It means replacing extractive models of business ownership with more local, generative and democratic forms of ownership. It means replacing the conventional approach to development, which might bring together public and private investment in ways that perhaps maximises profit for private developers, and replacing that in a system where development is designed by the community to meet its own needs. So I think to overcome some of those barriers, we need to focus on issues of ownership and issues of wealth extraction, and we need to redirect economic development infrastructure and resources to support more inclusive forms of business ownership and promote more community control of land and property assets. So issues around kind of ownership and democratic control of the economy, I think, are a really central and important part of the conversation here.
Thanks, John. And we've picked up on some of those issues, particularly in our energy work around community ownership of local energy schemes in particular, but also some of the work we've been doing on the foundation economy. So if you haven't seen, we published one report already, there'll be another one coming out in June, so next month. And obviously keen to make sure that things like the results of the Citizen Assembly around climate justice get as wide an audience as possible. And another piece of work that our colleague Harry is working on, too, who's on the call today, is looking at land use policy and again, what are communities' options and methods and what are the accepted methods, and getting those spread more broadly in terms of having a say in how land is being used and that benefit accruing back to communities too. So let's pick up, Ellen, on your question around resourcing, your point around resourcing. So obviously one of the key insights from this cross-sector group, and that's the great thing about the IWA, is always working people from lots of different sectors. So every day is a school day, that worked on the charter together was around funding, obviously. And we know that there are lots of different organisations out there offering money for communities to take forward projects, but not all communities or people within communities are equally able to spend the time and effort to pull those funding bids together. So one of our proposals is a new fund offered by Welsh Government. We think it should be offered by Welsh Government, that would essentially give community groups a bit of extra support and financial breathing space to develop the kinds of bigger bids for projects to help them recover post-pandemic, the kind of stuff that John's been talking about now. You know, whether those bids end up going back to Welsh Government for future funding or elsewhere, whether it's the lottery or other funders, specifically in those locations. But obviously, with many sources of funding becoming increasingly competitive, particularly post-Brexit, structural funds, excuse me, the Welsh Government's going to need to support communities to give them the edge in this really competitive environment, whether we like it or not. That's where we find ourselves. So can you talk us through a little bit where this idea came from and how you might see it working?
Yeah, a lot of places, especially those who might be in most of need of a project for their area to build back better after the pandemic, they don't often have shovel-ready schemes at the ready. They don't necessarily have the time to invest in applying for these, like UK, especially those coming out of UK government schemes. And they often don't have the training either to be able to win those bids. And if we don't want Wales to be left behind in this sector, then we really need to provide these communities with the tools to be able to apply for those, the time to design, especially co-design with people in the community, projects that are going to work for them with their local knowledge. And that they should be paid to do that. They shouldn't have to, you know, take time off work to do that, especially the communities that are really struggling. So that's where the idea came from. And we spoke a little bit to Project Skyline at the time, that's run by Green Valleys. And when with Project Skyline, they went to a community, not with this is what you're going to do, but just with an idea. And that's how that sprung and has been born. And we think that's really a really important way to give communities a voice and the tools to have that voice on a UK stage.
Thanks. And it sounds just, you know, to me, it sounds as obvious common sense, really. And maybe that's coming from a charity who's used to bidding in for work. But the time and resources taken to put together a bid is not insignificant. Well, it's significant. And, you know, there's quite a big risk in terms of return on that investment of time and resources. And if you've got people putting into putting time and resources into putting that bid together, they're not doing other things as well. So, Chris, I'm going to come to you, because obviously we know that small businesses have been stepping up throughout the pandemic to help communities. And you've seen a lot of that in your placemaking work around the country, and often in the face of huge challenges themselves. Can you share any really good examples of collaboration between businesses and the communities that you've heard about over the last year, or even pre-COVID? And what else Welsh Government could be doing to make that collaboration easier? I mean, obviously, when we, just before I let you answer, when we asked Welsh Labour before the election whether they'd support our proposal for this new fund, they pointed to their regional framework, their framework for regional investment as the basis for decentralising power to communities in local areas. So just a reflection on that, really, please, too.
Okay, hi everyone. I think the main thing for me is that those that have been successful haven't done it on their own. It's been through local partnerships that needn't be formalised or have heavy governance models. They just happen informally. And that's, as you know, through Facebook groups and social media and just having that spirit of actually doing something. So something that I saw last week when I was at the Wales Audit Office, so workshop last week, was up in Mould. So that's one example where Mould has done the sort of shop local sort of voucher scheme, which has really started to bridge that gap between consumers and local business. And that's gone like billy up there in terms of, you know, people actually liking it and using it, and just moving around currency and keeping it local.
Who's putting the vouchers out there? Who's creating them and sharing?
That's the town council, which is really progressive. You know, that's a really progressive town council that's actually working with local businesses. The vacancy rate has dropped to about 7%. Yeah, you know, the national average pre-COVID was about 15%. It's creeping up now post 20-25%. So you've got a town there that through collaboration has really seen the opportunity. The next one where I've been working in is down in the Vale of Glamorgan, where they've been working with local businesses around parklets. So a parklet is literally takes a car parking space outside the front of a shop or premise and has converted that into an eating and sort of drinking space. This is mainly about food and drink, yeah, food and drink sort of sector stuff. I think with COVID, we know some places have a very small footprint inside. So that's a really good example where the businesses are working with local authority. In old days, that would involve a license and rules and regulation, bureaucracy. That's been knocked down completely, and that's happened really quickly. So some things have happened through COVID, as Ellen said, that have actually really accelerated. Before COVID, it probably would take us 6 months to a year to have got that approved. But things have happened in weeks, yeah. Likewise, in Penarth, they've been looking at totally locally as well. They've got a website now, they do a spotlight on Facebook, and they're doing a fiver fest where you spend a fiver in your local shop, yeah? And it's all about that multiplier. If you spend a fiver in that town community, that, you know, the whole of that means £2 million probably spent in that local economy. And finally, in my hometown, Abergavenny, the indoor market here, the indoor market, people are texting, so people in fruit and veg, they're picking up from the back of the market hall. Now, that's been happening certainly during lockdown at times, but now I think we've started to realise where we can embrace digital, but also we still need to have that face-to-face experience. And that, I think the key word for me about business going forward is about the experience, but the experience of you engaging with a business, whether it be online, whether it be face-to-face, good customer care, good shop window, good point of sale. And then your final point, sorry, there's a lot to speak about, it's about collaboration. I think Welsh government need to keep doing what they were doing. Certainly, they were offering skills out there about digital, online, social media. Key thing for me is about procurement, again, about short supply chains, linking that into foundational economy, which also goes on to another thing the Welsh government are looking into around co-working hubs. I'm four doors down from a co-working hub, which is almost full now because of COVID in terms of people coming back to the town. We need to make sure co-working hubs do buy locally and do supply locally. I'm in an office here in Abergavenny where my stationery, my accountants, my IT, my sandwiches, yeah, is bought within 100 yards of here. So that needs to be done properly. And finally, there's the fiscal incentives, aren't there, about rates and sort of taxation. Yeah, it's fair to say the last year has really impacted on cash flow. And Welsh Government have some good capital grant schemes through the Transforming Towns programme. They've been looking at urban centre property enhancement funds. But coming out of this, the private sector needs to have a bit more cream left, you know what I mean, to start having that match funding towards sort of capital improvements, adaptation, diversifying their sort of shops and premises. So I think we've got to keep doing what we were doing, but we're also going to be a bit more agile and a bit more connected in terms of policy and about programmes.
That's really interesting, and thanks for all those examples. Well done for being the poster boy for buy local. I think you could market that much more. That's great. John, let's just pick up on this framework for regional investment programme, and whether it addresses that problem that we talked about in terms of community capacity to write bids and kickstart projects. Because you've talked quite a lot about, you know, big ticket democracy things here, but there's also, to get the money, you've got to produce the proposal that has budgeted and, you know, covers the issues and ticks these boxes in terms of future gens and everything else. That's a tall order if you're just making baby steps towards getting more involved in your local community, because, you know, you're a mum with young kids, and you can see a need for something and you think, actually, I know what this demographic is and I can make that happen. Or you're somebody who's retired, or you're trying to put together a sports facility, for instance, for young people. All the sorts of different things that make places great to live in for lots of different parts of the community. Do you think it gets at that?
I suppose to start, it's worth saying that I think that there's an awful lot that should be welcomed in the framework for regional investment. The kind of multi-year financing, I think, will help communities in terms of longer term kind of planning certainty. The whole place-based focus, I think, helps support that shift to a more place-based economic policy. Kind of overriding commitment around decentralizing funding and decision making is really welcome, and that focus on community-led local development. But I guess the devil will be in the detail and in the spirit of how that's implemented. And as you say, you know, we know that, you know, community-led local development really requires investment in the capacity of those communities to be able to develop their agendas and their proposals from the grassroots. So I think there does need to be a kind of renewed focus on collaboration, on more deliberative approaches to supporting communities to do that. And I think communities and community organisations will need adequate support, training and resources in order to do that. And obviously that was the rationale for the proposal in the Welsh Places Charter for a community enabling fund to support communities to do just that. So I would hope that we would all continue to advocate for that, but also just to say that for me, that's not just a role for Welsh government, but for all levels of governance in Wales, and also for all of the anchor institutions in the place to think about how they're enabling their communities to participate and how they're opening up those conversations and those more deliberative approaches and really supporting that collaboration that was mentioned earlier.
Thanks. I think, you know, I'm just thinking about anchor institutions. I mean, some larger anchor institutions may be perfectly comfortable and used to seeing themselves as anchor institutions, mightn't they? But some smaller ones in smaller places might not see themselves as anchor institutions. There's still kind of quite a way to go on that score. That thing around capacity also is, you know, knowing what's out there in terms of data and feeling comfortable with it. And we saw UWP, and we still see UWP very much as a way of enabling people to kind of get to grips with what's known about their place and the story of their place in the past, present, and helping them shape what the story of the place might be. As an aside, for people who are here, just so you know, over 10,000 people have now used UWP since it was first launched in October 2019. And if you haven't used it yet, I really would suggest you go and have a look and play around with it. Make yourself a cup of coffee, settle down and see what you can find out about places that you thought you knew. Because maybe you don't know them in quite the same way, or maybe they're going to tell you that they're similar to different places across the country. So this group, this Welsh Places Influencing Group, arose out of the group helping steer UWP from idea to reality. And it's absolutely that whole thing around making data accessible and opening it up to people who might not be able to access it or interpret it in a lovely Ron Seal, other varnishes are available kind of way. It does what it says on the tin. But obviously, it's not just about external organisations to fix the gaps in public provision of data. And we are advocating very much for data to be seen as an essential service for people right across the country, because too often data and evidence about Welsh places can be hard to find, hard to understand, or not available at all. So we, as part of our questions to the political parties pre-election in terms of how they would all respond to our call to improve the accessibility, quality and presentation of data and evidence, Welsh Labour, obviously now in government again, pointed to their digital strategy as the vehicle for this change. And Roisin, I'm going to come to you, please, really, just for your reflections on that digital strategy and what it means for this whole agenda of things that we're talking about this afternoon. What does it get right? Because we want to, you know, credit where credit's due. And where could it go much further?
Yeah, it is. It really is a comprehensive strategy. So they launched it back in March. And what's good about it is it doesn't just deal with data or with connectivity, for example, but brings everything together. So it looks at what services do we have that could be provided by digitization, and that could lead to a lot of improvements. Importantly, what are the skills needed to take this forward? We can't just pick things up and run with it. And it's that interconnectivity of digital skills as well. And how we bring those together. How can we support the economy? How can we encourage the digital economy as well? So it really looks at that side of it. Connectivity, of course, that's really important. And we see that across particularly the rural areas of Wales because of economies of scale. We live in a very beautiful place, but that's because we've got lots of hills and mountains, and that causes problems with digitization, and we don't want cables everywhere, etc. So there are lots of issues around that. Importantly, it talks about digital inclusion as well, because there's a real risk that if we just go completely down the digital route without thinking about it, you know, it's get on the train if you can, but if you can't, well, you know, we're going down this route. So there's a real need to look at digital inclusion. And that is partly linked to skills. It's partly linked to, you know, perhaps older generations that haven't had that, you know, haven't been brought up with digital connectivity. There's a cost attached to it as well. So, you know, for people that perhaps, you know, are choosing, making difficult decisions on where they put their budget, you know, that will be important as well. And that impacts on businesses as well. You know, can businesses afford this? So the strategy is really good in recognizing all of this, and of course data and collaboration over data. So that's really important, because it's quite expensive to collect data. So actually, if we can collaborate on it and bring it all together, then that's really, really positive. I suppose the challenges are, and this is the strategy is very, very new, and so hopefully this will come out in time, is how do we use that data? Data can be very, is a really valuable tool, but it can also be used in the wrong way. It can be misinterpreted. So that's linked to the skills, et cetera, as well. So how do we use that data, and how can we present it to people as well? You know, data is a very specialist study. So understanding Welsh places is a really good example of how it's how we can present that data to people. And we need to look at that across the board as well. There are other data sets that we need to bring into that. That might be biodiversity data, for example, which will be really important as well. So it's a major change, and the strategy recognises that it's a culture change as well about how we approach things. So we must be careful not to leave anyone behind in all of this, and recognise that it will take a lot of time and a lot of effort, time investment into getting this right, and for everyone to take this forward. So those are perhaps the things that need to be looked at in the strategy, in how it's implemented and rolled out.
Thanks, Roisin. I think, you know, reflecting on what you're saying, issues around, you know, people within a particular sector may be quite au fait with what the data in that sector means, but, you know, somebody over here for whom that issue also affects them may not be aware about those interplays. John, you know, there's a bit of a recurrent theme in terms of great strategies, shame about the delivery sometimes with Welsh Government. Is there anything else that you would like to see them pushing further on in terms of data and digital? I think Roisin's given us a really good expose of the situation as things stand, but if we wanted to go to the ideal, what would that look like?
Well, I think one aspect that I probably would like to pick up on, following on from what Roisin said about, you know, what's done with the data, and it's obviously important that the power of data is harnessed for public good and is used to enhance social, economic, environmental well-being. I think the strategy is clearly committed to that objective, and it's framed through the kind of lens of the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act. But thinking specifically about the digital economy section of the strategy, I do think there's a need to think very seriously about addressing the barriers to small and medium-sized firms, how you counter the dominance of some of the large tech players and their extractive ownership models. I think you only need to look at how we all kind of currently buy and sell things online, or even how we order kind of takeaway food, to see the type of extractive business models that currently dominate and corner those markets. And some of that has accelerated during the pandemic. So I think we need to be thinking quite seriously about more generative alternatives to those business models, and also how to reduce the barriers to smaller and more local businesses that are seeking to develop new kind of digital innovations and applications. And I think, you know, there is some interesting emerging practice elsewhere in the UK. In Glasgow, in Scotland, for example, there are plans for a community wealth building digital lab that will bring together academics, tech experts, and communities. And they're particularly looking at addressing the barriers to small and medium-sized firms kind of innovating in that space. And I think that's a type of initiative that could really succeed in Wales, you know, supported by the digital strategy.
That's interesting. I know we've got people from Wales Co-op on the call today, and maybe if somebody could share in the chat what they're doing in that space in terms of that kind of cross-sector stuff, because I know they're particularly working on digital inclusion as well as social enterprises too. But I want to just pick up, and Chris, I'm going to come to you with this before we go to audience Q&A, because you made a reference to the Transforming Towns Fund before. You know, we know that towns have become a much greater focus of policy, and that's partly because they were long neglected in favour of cities and economic agglomeration. And policymakers do seem finally to be recognising that they need to play a more active role in ensuring that every place in Wales is a good place to live and work. So again, you know, pre-election, the IWA, we asked all parties, but we're just going to focus on the Labour Party's response, given that, again, forming the Welsh Government, what their vision of a town centre would be. And the Transforming Towns Fund was the focus of their response. So could you just share your take on that and what other new opportunities the new government should be taking to go even further? You know, at the beginning of a five-year term, what would you like to see happening?
I think it's fair to say that there is a town centre first policy. I don't think, though, we should be inward looking. We need to be looking at how we relate to our neighbourhoods. And I think, as Roisin said, I think it's really key to how we connect into our neighbourhoods. You know, we all had through lockdown that sort of 5 mile reach, didn't we? You know, I think people have really started to sort of value what's on their doorstep. So for me, it's about homes, quality of homes, play, amenity space or green infrastructure, how we walk, how we cycle, public transport. So there's a question of sort of in the box there of Abbot O'Leary, you know, public transport not shutting down at 5:30, you know, quality, frequency of service, you know, all that's really important about mobility. And I think going on to then the town centre itself, it's about ensuring that there's a spirit of change that we need to sort of work with now. People actually, you know, about well-being, about basic services, about quality, affordable in-town living. Yeah. Planning policy and sort of planners in terms of use classes and getting into that stuff now, but need to be a bit more agile about land use and about building use that does not dilute the quality, but needs to be there. I'm currently working on active travel projects in Wales, which are really important about how people sort of connect into their local offer. Just to go off on one about funding, is that all right, just briefly? Funding, to be fair to Welsh Government, on their previous programme around sort of town centre regeneration, TRI funding, targeted regeneration funding, That had a good 3 to 4 year programme. It was a good horizon. We need to watch in government. There are other programmes that are still annual, and you can't plan. You haven't got that horizon. You haven't got that sense of a community. Where do you want to be? You know, these things take time. I think, as Roisin said, you know, the sort of Grange scheme in Cardiff, that took a long time, Roisin, in terms of that being designed and thought about, yeah? Those take 2 to 3 years, but there are some things that can happen now, yeah, because we sort of know, it's an instinct, we can do it. So government, I think, needs to, it's about trust, is that all right? That word trust, and about relationships. And that goes back to the point of John about localism and about capacity. And just through our data, through UWP and all that, we've got a real good, rich stream of stuff here, haven't we? Yeah, that we can start to work with. It's just ensuring that those channels work between local places and government.
That's interesting. Thanks, Chris. That's really interesting. I've just jotted down a few things then from what you were saying. One is, I wonder if there's an audit, if anybody knows, and maybe people know in the chat, if there's an audit of what is still annual funding and what is multi-year and what needs to be, not needs to shift, and have a kind of view of that. That's one query. Your thing about these things take time, I'm just looking at Twitter now saying, yes, absolutely, we've got a long way to go. I saw a comment that, you know, it's still very much kind of councils know best kind of approaches, and the councils being the unitary authorities, not necessarily town and community councils. So that shift in terms of where power lies. And this thing around short and long-term issues. Roisin, you know, planning has obviously got a really fundamental role to play in all of this. And I hold up my hand, not being a planner. And I'm delighted to come and speak at Welsh Planner Live next month. And that's great. I never thought I'd be speaking at that or at a Statistical Society conference either. But that's another thing. UWP has taken me to places I didn't know I could go. You know, there's going to be a lag time, isn't there, in terms of some things that have been in the planning already for a while. I wonder whether there's enough done now to kind of flag up some of those longer term projects that are already at the beginning stages of that community engagement, sort of just more broadly outside of those immediate environments on the one hand, But I also have a question for you, which is a bit more systemic, which is, you know, is Wales's planning system ready for the task, and what kind of additional support do you and your colleagues need to play the best possible role in revitalising Welsh towns? Because, you know, capacity is obviously an issue. Very conscious, obviously, that this conversation is happening. We're still not out of the pandemic either, and a lot of bandwidth is still taken up at a local authority level on things that might be perceived as more immediate and essential. You know, so can you just talk us through that bundle, please? I realise there's about two or three different questions in there.
Yeah. In terms of future projects coming forward, if I start with your first point that you've made, there are things in the kind of tunnel, if you like, which people are working through. I hear feedback from both private sector consultants and local authorities that actually the designing and planning stage has never been so busy. I mean, local authorities are all reporting increases in planning applications. Now, that will be from anything from householder applications through to major applications. But, you know, larger consultancies, architectural and planning consultancies are very busy as well. So there is a lot going on. Consultation engagement with communities has been understandably difficult during the pandemic. So I think we need to be very much aware of that. Certainly planning teams have made a great deal of effort in terms of trying to meet the statutory requirements, but for companies to be able to do full engagement has been more difficult because of the social distancing. So unless it's been digital, which there has been a lot of, that is more difficult. But turning to what the planning system, et cetera, that, you know, we have strong policies in Wales. The Planning Policy Wales, the National Planning Policy Statement, is very strong and really strong about supporting active, vibrant town centres, et cetera. So that is really good. And we've got Future Wales as well, which is the National Development Framework, which Ellen mentioned. But that's at a much higher tier level. That's about your national requirements. So there is an element in there for towns. But your local development plans are really, really important in this. And there should be enough flexibility in there to provide a good approach to town centres, because that's one of their remits as well, generally speaking, across Wales, is about providing vibrant town centres. I suppose we're just going through that phase of what is a new vibrant town centre in, you know, COVID has moved things on, as Chris has referred, quite quickly. So what will the new look be? And it will be a good number of years before we really get to the bottom of what we want new out of that. So what we do need, though, is to take local development plans and work collaboratively with others. So that's with the private sector, with communities, other parts of councils as well. So people that are leading on regeneration teams. And we really need to think through for each town, find out what their USP is. You know, where can they really excel? You know, we've heard about things going on in Abergavenny. Each town is different and we don't want the same place everywhere as well. So it's about that collaboration and using the planning policies to help design that for the long term as well.
Can I pop in there?
Yes, you? Ellen, I was just going to come to you next. So you make your comment first and I'm going to come back to you with a question.
Okay, a lot of these things that we do actually lay out in the charter. So we want places to be vibrant. We want to celebrate their own personal culture and heritage. And we want them to be flexible and easy to use. And there's things in there like supporting the Welsh language and helping celebrate that in our local places. And making sure that there are multiple modes of transport that are accessible and affordable for everyone as well. And if you're interested, you can have a look at those, the specific asks. Because Welsh Government, they have signed up to the Placemaking Charter, which is an amazing thing, coordinated by many people across Wales. I know, Roisin, you're involved. And we support those principles in the Charter, but we also have written some solid actions that we think Welsh Government could do in order to make that a reality. And they could really take that and run with it. Something that I find personally frustrating is that we have all this amazing policy. Planning Policy Wales is really great but we're still seeing urban sprawl being created and invested in. And something that Welsh government could do is stop any of those developments from happening, as we know that they don't serve like the economy that we want to go forward with, that is going to be suitable for our future generations.
Okay, thanks, Ellen. Good challenge there. I'm going to pick up on a couple of questions. We have got time for another one if something's burning in anybody's mind. But this is a question from Sarah Lloyd-Jones from People and Work Unit. Ellen, I'm going to come to you first, please, and then Chris. So given the complexity of communities with different groups of people, what in practice are really effective forms of hyper-local democracy work, and what role, if any, could town and community councils take in that?
So we actually have a member of One Voice Wales that is sat on the Welsh Places Charter group. So thank you to Lynn for that. And one of the actions that we've actually called for is to introduce a town and community council development fund. So what we hope that would do is help places that don't have town community councils set them up so that we'd have a greater spread. But we also want to encourage different types of people to be standing and having the confidence to stand in those roles. A lot of our town and community councils are run by very similar people, and we'd really like to open that to ensure that everybody's voice is being heard. I was at a conference actually earlier this year, I think you might have been there, Oriel, with someone who has a disability who was on their town and community council, and they have like completely changed the makeup of their local area through that. And I just think a lot of those things would not have been on the radar without their involvement, and it really goes a long way.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Neil Harris, I've sort of bundled your question in with that one because I know you were saying were town councils more important drivers than local authorities in shaping places? I think that potentially they could be. John, let's come back to you with a question from Samuel Young about land ownership and how this is changing in line with broader efforts to develop community projects and redirect economic growth to serve local areas. Can you share anything from sort of wider Clare's experience? We talked a little bit about where the conversation is at in Wales already.
Yeah, I think, you know, coming back to the importance really of ownership of land and property assets and what anchor organisations can do collectively to kind of widen the access to their land and property kind of portfolios for social businesses, for third sector, for social enterprise, for wider community use. I think there's really good examples of that all across the UK. I think there are examples as well at a more kind of regional level where places are taking much more of a kind of strategic look at land and property ownership issues. So things like the Liverpool Land Commission, worth having a look at some of the outcomes of work like that. And again, I think this is about leadership and governance at all levels, getting really serious about ownership of land and property and its potential to support a kind of well-being economy and drive the sort of future, including in relation to town centres that we've just been talking about.
Okay, thank you. And if you can find a link to the Liverpool Land Commission, do chuck it in the chat as well, please. Andy, I'm going to ask you to come on your video because we've been talking previously about how you were radicalised by a photo of a very depressing little playground. Do you want to just tell us about that?
Yeah, so sorry, abusing my IWA staff privileges to just jump on the video without an invite. Exactly that. A picture on Twitter of a big slab of concrete with a metal fence around it, a bin, a park bench, and then the only play item was one of those little kind of wobbly sheep on a spring. So basically a place that a child could probably play with happily for about 30 seconds in my experience. And I just thought this is one of the most depressing things I've ever seen in terms of like the culmination of placemaking policies. And it just made me realize that we hadn't really focused on places for children when we were pulling the charter together. We hadn't kind of said a lot about it, which is maybe something we should think about in future. So I'm just interested what people on the panel think. I don't know, choosing to direct the question myself as well, Auriel. So just
go for it. That's fine.
I wondered if maybe Roisin, with a planning perspective, any kind of examples of good practice for child-friendly places and what policies we need to support them.
Yeah, I think that we've done a lot of research actually lately about child-friendly policies, and in fact, it's come out. Colleagues have done it across the UK, and Wales has come out as the best, actually. It's one of the nations that has policies in place to encourage playgrounds. So obviously the one that you saw has slipped through the net. But part of it as well is about how these facilities are funded and how local authorities prioritise them. So, you know, there's probably some in the historical ones as well that haven't been picked up so much on that. But it is about looking at places through different lenses, and that's the importance of having wider community engagement as well. So the comment that was made earlier about the disabled person that was involved, you know, it brings a new lens to look at places through places. So having community engagement which involves young people as well is really important. What do they want from places, and how you can bring that in as well. So making places for everyone. I know Belfast City Council has employed ARUP to do a major strategy about making Belfast child friendly as well. So, you know, it can be done on a city scale as well as on an individual place as well.
Thanks, Roisin. And I can see a couple of good suggestions coming in. Chris, I'm going to come to you in a tick, but I just want to chuck into the chat, and maybe Andy, you can find it on Twitter. There's an interesting initiative in Somerset, led from somebody in Somerset, saying make space for girls because of the kind of just gender disparity of teenage girls and places to hang out and gather. So some really interesting stuff piggybacking off the back of Caroline Criado Perez's Invisible Women data-led work. Chris, you wanted to come in on that as well, I know.
Yeah, I was just going to say about Section 106 monies, you know, being spent in a proper way, you know, I mean, planning it. And I think, as Roisin was starting to allude to, just having a plan for an area that is informed, is connected, you know where people meet, and about an area that isn't just a fence around it, it is a place, yeah, is really important. And for me, about developers, you know, about just trying to ensure that they aren't two arms length from that community, they feel immersed in it, and you get the value out of that S106 monies, and then the local authority can get money around biodiversity, around green infrastructure, around active travel, just making the pound go a bit further, you know, really flexing it. Yeah.
One of the things, that just going back to the point about disability, one of the things that we brought in, and Ellen made this happen, was in UWP2, the kind of second iteration of data that we pulled in at the end of last year, was around accessibility of public toilets, for instance, for people being out and about, both for people with disabilities, but also just for older people generally, anybody generally. You know, that sort of thing, enabling people to spend more time wandering around and spending money or going to places knowing that they could access a public toilet. I'm conscious of time. The hour always flies. There was a question from Brian Cook about how can we make sure opening a business in town is more accessible, which is, and her example from Abertillery, lots, you know, really acknowledging the feeling of supporting local does seem to be getting traction and stronger than ever, which is great to hear. But lots of these businesses would like to open in the town centre, which is full of empty and decaying shops, but rent and rates are out of reach. Making the high street an accessible location for people is part of regenerating them, which has been a struggle for many years in deprived areas. So lots of these are interconnected issues, aren't they, in terms of where and how people work, what public transport is available for them, and so on. And I can see in the chat there's some good suggestions coming in for things for other people to look at too. I'm going to draw us to a close. Some of the issues here are around both the complexity of these interlocking issues, some issues around time, but also I think a clear theme coming through for me is very much about there's some really practical suggestions in the Welsh Places Charter. This isn't just something we're going to launch now at the beginning of this Welsh Government term and say, right, job done, off we trot. We're going to be keeping a really close eye with our partners on changes practical and deliverable changes that are happening in Wales, and spotting good examples of where that's happening as well, so to make sure that good practice does travel well across the country. Do please continue to share those sorts of ideas with us. The Welsh Agenda is open for articles on good practice of these sorts of issues too. We really do want to use our platform to share that widely. I'd like to really thank everybody for taking the time to join today's conversation, to thank our panellists for giving us their time today, Ellen Jones, Roisin Wilmot, Chris Jones and John Hennehan. And a warm thank you to the other members of the group who haven't featured on the panel today, some of whom I know are with us and others who couldn't be. So Michael Woods from Aberystwyth University, Pippa Coots from Carnegie UK Trust, Leerup Gareth from the FSB, Vivian Sugar is an independent member of the group, Andy Regan from the RWA, Peter Williams from The Means, Lynn Cadwallader from One Voice Wales, and Scott Orford from the team at Wizard who built UWP in the first place. We're really grateful to you all for your thoughtful contributions. Some things do take time, and having bright ideas and continuing to work on them also takes time. We've been around since 1987 and we continue to work in partnership to develop bright ideas to make Wales better. The support of our members makes our work possible. So if you haven't joined yet, why not? Now's your chance. And there's going to be a link in the chat where you can do just that. It's quick and easy. There's also a short survey coming up in the chat too about how useful you found this conversation. We really do appreciate people sharing feedback on today's conversation because it helps us think about what we can do next and how we can do it even better in future. Our next IWA event happens to be this coming Thursday, and we're going to be looking, it's part of our Rethinking Wales series. We're going to be at 11 o'clock in the morning, going to be looking at community sport in the pandemic and inequalities of access too. We really look forward to you joining us then. Diolch yn fawr, thank you.